First a reminder, remember to tell me to stop the question box. The questions, comments, have been going my judgments for 25 years, objections. They never ask questions in class, I mean, always objections. For our question, and that's a period. This evening, remember what we said about the first condition for making a good retreat is to have made a good confession. We continue with our reflections on the document of the Second Vatican Council on the lay apostolate. As soon as this is printed, it will be made available to all of you. The council answers the question, how are the laity to practice the Beatitudes? Our present meditation, therefore, is our the Beatitudes and the lay apostolate. What I thought I would do is to go through the Beatitudes in this meditation, and after each one, make an explanation not only of the Beatitudes as such, but its apostolic dimension. Remember the context in which Christ gave the Beatitudes. He was at the beginning of his Sermon on the Mount, the 5th, 6th, and 7th chapters of Matthew's Gospel, the Magna Carta of Christian spirituality, in contrast with the pre-Christian Mosaic morality of the Old Law. Christ began his discourse on how he was raising the Old Testament morality to heights never before dreamed of. He began by taking his chosen disciples apart and exclusively to them, giving them first the Beatitudes, and as we shall see, giving them two very clear mandates on how they are to be the light of the world and the salt of the earth. In one declarative sentence, that's the theme of this retreat. For we are to be the light of the world and the salt of the earth. First, the Beatitudes, one at a time. Looking at the Jerusalem Bible, even though it's my publisher, double name, the same one that publishes the Jerusalem Bible, more than once, I try to quote the Jerusalem Bible whenever my conscience allows me. Every so often, I don't. Publisher complains, you didn't quote from our Jerusalem Bible. Sorry, I disagree with this translation. I always make sure I have a contract beforehand. In the Jerusalem Bible, the Beatitudes begin can't be unhappy on the free spirit. Theirs is the kingdom of heaven. The best translation is blessed, not merely happy. To be blessed means to be made happy by God. There are two kinds of happiness: natural happiness and supernatural happiness. Happiness, the joy, the pleasure that comes from, well, enjoying the good things of this world. All legitimate. Satisfaction of eating a good meal. The satisfaction of, say, coming home after a good, hard, successful day's work. The Beatitudes are not really promises of happiness. They are promises of supernatural, superhuman, or shall I say, they are promises of humanly impossible happiness. And the first Beatitude promises, not naturally, but by God's grace, the joy of the poor in spirit. Theirs, Christ promises, is the kingdom of heaven. But hear it. It's not merely the kingdom of heaven in eternity. It's already the kingdom of heaven here on earth. We're only as happy as we are detached from the things of this world. Most massive cosmic lie of the evil spirit is to promise happiness through indulging, enjoying the things of this world. We are an instant power. They are to satisfy what we want, even though contrary to the will of God. And the closer you come to eternity, oh, how much you learn. Learn that everything, and the word is everything in this world, is in the Raj. Except insofar as it is an effective means of reaching our eternal destiny. Of the apostolic dimension, it shall be only as effective in winning souls to Christ, you fathers, beginning with your children, as they see you, and I mean it, detached from the things of this world. In other words, an nation like ours, the wealthiest nation, not just in the world, but in human history, God's grace will work through us to bring Christ's wisdom to other people. And I repeat, it's not merely example, it is the mystery of grace. Insofar as we ourselves are detached from everything in this world. Years, many years ago, I've decided I should not expect 3 meals a day or a normal night's sleep to provide for the spiritual needs of others. You've got to exert yourself. You've got to give up many things that you naturally like. Second Beatitude. If you are the gentle, they shall have the earth for the heritage. There are two legitimate translations of the word, either gentle or meek. Meekness is the virtue of temperance, controlling one's irascibility, controlling one's anger. Gentleness is strength, moved by charity. These people cannot be gentle. You're insulted. You are treated unjustly. And you've got the strength out of being just muscle. You've got the vocabulary. I'll never forget. In Washington, D.C., I told this, some of you, how many times. Did my provincial superior for a dinner we were to have, nine of us, living in Washington, D.C. No one else in clerics accept. Well, what do you expect? Pardon. I meet my provincial superior outside this plush restaurant, and he greets me, "Hello, priest. Undressed and well, what else?" My priestly attire and, of course, the Roman color. Happened to have been my student in theology. When he said, "Hello, priest," believe me, I've got a rich vocabulary. Well, that's what this second beatitude is all about. Gentleness, meekness. And what is Christ's promise? "They shall possess the earth." You might say, "Thanks, Lord. Who wants the whole earth?" What does Christ mean? Over the centuries, the churches have said, the second beatitude tells us, we shall be as effective instruments of God's grace in the lives of others. We shall have as much influence over them as we are meek and gentle of heart. I know what I'm talking about. There are two father hearts, before and after. Took me years to control my passion of anger. I think I now have some control. What it takes, strong-willed people, to God's grace, to master the natural, spontaneous, give it a big name, irascibility. If you want to influence people, you can't be a weasel. You got to have muscle. And I don't mean just physical muscle. But out of love for Christ and for the person whom you wish to draw closer to Christ, you will, with the grace of Christ, be gentle, meek, kind. And the influence you will have over others, beginning with your own offspring, is in direct measure to your mastery of this violent, masculine passion. Beatitude. Happy are those who mourn. They shall be comforted. again more accurately and faithful to the original Greek of St. Matthew, blessed, made happy by God, are those who are mourned, they shall be comforted. I cannot tell you what a powerful channel of grace in the lives of others is your own deep, down, heartfelt sympathy for the sufferings of others. Oh, as souls or bricks, as especially we men can be, I don't mean the grim emotion. I mean, mourn with others. We sorrow to their loss of someone they loved. And hear it. And we sorrow, we mourn with those who are estranged from God by their lives of sin. Such people, in the deepest sense, are to be pitied. They're in dreadful need. Their eternal destiny is at stake. God uses sympathetic people as his principal channels of grace. One day in the August in Detroit, so many things to be done, I told the secretary then working for me, let's close the answering machine from 9 to 5. But there was an answering system and counted the number of calls that came through. 47. And most of those calls from people, you name the sorrows, the trials through which human beings are going, especially in our day. A husband does something stupid, says something crazy to his wife. And, as only a woman can do, she pays him back. And instead of he stupidly getting angry with her, first of all, he should mourn over his own, say, outburst. Admit he's wrong. But then, watch it. We are to show special love, special generosity toward those whom we have offended. How good God is to those who mourn with others. We are told, they shall be comforted, strengthened. It is now my 20th year in working with the missionaries of charity throughout the world. It most changes the people whom the sisters serve. They cannot be much physically helped. How they want, how they need the touch of a loving hand, the sound of a loving voice. To realize ourselves that we be our mourning, God allows us the trials that we experience here so we might more rely on Him and tell Him, dear Lord, I thank you for this cross. And the more you have suffered, I assure you, the more you will be able to suffer and sympathize and be a channel of grace to those who are in sorrow or if some in mere this area. That's the attitude. Nothing those who hunger and thirst for what is right, they shall be satisfied. In the biblical vocabulary, the two strongest words for desire are hunger and thirst. What are we being told by Christ? We're being told by Him to so strongly desire, hunger and thirst for what is right. And what is right? What God wants. And in the measure that our hunger and thirst for doing God's will is strong in our own hearts, the more sure we shall be that God will give us no mere comfort. That's a cheap English word. Strengthened by Christ Himself. Don't we need this? If we're going to help others and enable them to carry their cross faithfully and fulfill what may be the humanly impossible demands made by God's providence, these people. I use this figure now several times. I'm not sure whether to you yet. But my latest statistics are $150 billion spent each year now in the United States for advertising. $150 billion. Enough, I'm told, to support most of the major nations in the world. And we spent those billions on advertising alone. To entice, to attract, to allure, dare I use the word, to seduce people. As the cynic says, to buy what people don't need with money they don't have. For the number of college graduates that I've come to know over the years, to live in his college, they graduated with the flat graduate cap and gown, their debts, 25, 30, $40,000, $50,000 debt, not unusual. All this retreat is over. We're the highest authority in the church, the vicars of Christ. All you people need to Christianize our professions, economics, politics, a legal profession, a medical profession. All we need to Christianize, shall we still call them, the social sciences. Young people enticed to get themselves a college degree and then enslaved 10, 15 or more years. A girl they're keeping company with, inheriting a $30,000 debt the day she marries. How many have a vocation to a priesthood? How many I know don't have the resources first to pay off their heavy debt. And the Americans have become so hypnotized by the things of this world. People move along like robots and become enslaved by a culture which is just the opposite of the Beatitudes. Happy are the merciful, they shall have mercy shown them. I know no single beatitude better. I know no single injunction by Christ that is more indispensable to be a channel of grace to others. There will be only as much grace to others as you are merciful to others. And being merciful to others implies that of the essence of that word, mercy. It implies that someone has offended you. And not just once or twice. And you married men. And I say this with more caution when I speak to women. With less caution when I talk to men. Speaking men and women, there's no question. Who has the strongest will? It's the women. And women ever, can they ever dominate men? Oh. Never guess when you look at them. What is that? Weak in physical muscle. Ooh. As I've said so many times, 15 years, from the age of 1 to the age of 16, reared in a household only of women. I thought of this more than once, but I decided against writing what I know about women. If there's one virtue which we men have to practice, it is mercy. But it's Christ's promise. He shall have mercy shown us. And watch it. Those you most test are patience. Those who most impose on our charity. Those towards whom he find it hardest to practice mercy. Hear it. Are those who most need God's grace. And by our mercy towards them, what a statement. We shall be then channels of God's mercy to them. They need grace. Only God can get it. But we are to be channels of His grace. And hear it. God will consciously, with divine providence, put into our lives. Now watch my adjectives. Nasty people. Unkind people. Thoughtless people, mean people, selfish people, cruel people, people who will use us, people who are vengeful. It is part of God's infinite wisdom. He puts such people precisely into our lives, in order that by practicing mercy towards them, he might gain for them the grace they would otherwise never get unless someone had practiced mercy towards them. But he's been very good to me. He has over the years sent me so many people, but of my own word, who have offended me. What a mild word. Enterprises that I've spent years planning, organizing, and then smile on their face. They take everything away. And in so many words, tell me to get out. His mercy is the hardest virtue for us to practice. I know whereof I speak. In the measure of our practice of mercy towards those who are cruel, unjust, mean, thieves, for what we have, and truly the worst thievery, the stealing of our good name, will use us. Notice the apostolic dimension. Will use us to bring extraordinary graces to these people who need these graces. And that's why, what a strange statement. That's why God wants us to suffer at their lips, their eyes, their writing, and even at their hands. Nothing on the pure of heart, they shall see God. Over the centuries of the church's history, she has always interpreted this beatitude on two levels, is both purity from sin and chastity. In other words, God will use us to bring souls to Himself, souls back to Himself, in the measure of our own sinlessness. Secondly, God will also use us as tellers of His grace of chastity and the measure of our own practice of this, what St. Thomas calls the angelic virtue. To follow, how we need, Lord, how desperately we need chaste sons and daughters in today's sex-possessed world. All the preachifying of the world will be so much wasted effort unless we, you fathers, are living honest to God, chaste lives yourselves, and no one cheats you. And what is the reward that Christ promises? They shall see God. God, already in this world, and especially see God in being able to pray. Over the years of teaching, especially my 5 years on the faculty of a state university, don't tell me they've got problems praying. I ask the question they don't expect. On your sex life. And every once in a while they tell me, what's that got to do with my prayer? I tell them everything. Only chaste people can pray. I didn't learn that last night. We're going to see God in our daily lives of prayer. You must be living lives of sincere, honest to God, chastity. is seeing God is not only in this world, it is also in the world to come. The two indispensable conditions for reaching heaven are first sinlessness and then chastity. And the two are very closely related. Alphonsus Liguori, heavenly patron of confessors, and on a shelf of books in Cathy Morality says, most of those who go to hell go there because of sins against chastity. And we then, we know ourselves. Most men have strong sexual inclinations. I've told so many young men getting married, hoping that just by getting married, well, no more sex temptations. But a mirage. I mean, they once they marry, every other woman except their wife will be an ugly Jezebel. Here, I'd like to quote this figure. The prospects for divorced women remarrying in our country are 6 times as good as those of single women of their age. Women know men. I'd like to tell this episode who I gave my first retreat after ordination. I asked one of my fellow Jesuit priests, any practical suggestions on to give my first retreat to a community of nuns. I'll never forget what he told me. John, during this week's retreat, just assume you are making a general confession. What do you mean? And what you say, those nuns, oh, women are shrewd, will size you up. They will know all about you by the time you finish that retreat. Just assume you are making a general confession. Over the years, it's helped a lot. And if we're going to both preserve our chastity and grow in sinlessness as we grow in age, we must know how to watch our eyes, especially our eyes. Is all the difference in the world between seeing and looking. 14 years living in New York City, I have talked to the specialists in beauty culture and those who were tycoons and the manufacture of women's clothing. The most advanced psychological science is used to seduce men through women's attire. Do you hear me? We go on. Blessed are the peacemakers. They shall be called children of God. What is Christ? Identifies peacemakers. Over the years, I never tire repeating. I tell people, a good teacher is one who can repeat without boring his audience. Peace negatively is the absence of conflict. Peace positively is called in theology tranquillitas ordinis, the tranquility of order. If things are where they should be, there's peace. Well, there are two kinds of peace. There's peace of mind and peace of heart. Peace of mind is the experience of knowing the truth. No one else, period. No one else has peace of mind except the one who knows the truth. And the measure of that peace of mind is the degree in which that mind knows the truth. That's why my latest figures are 70 million Americans surviving a medically prescribed pharmaceutical tranquilizers. You must know the truth. Learn the truth. Learn more truth. Peace of heart. Peace of heart is the experience of doing God's will. Or is the devil ever a liar? And he's a prince of this world mainly because he is such a successful deceiver. Pro-choice what? I choose what I want. And they expect peace of heart. I know what I'm talking about. They experience hell on earth. And the world spends billions supplying for the absence of peace of heart. All the countless ways, shall we call it, entertainment. Anything to distract the mind and the heart from reality. On the apostolic dimension, Christ is telling us we are to be peacemakers. And we shall be as effective peacemakers for others as we ourselves are at peace in our own minds and hearts. I don't think I should apologize. This will be a full hour's meditation. You don't cover the eight Beatitudes in 15 minutes. Our own peace of mind in possessing the truth, our own peace of heart in doing God's will be the most effective means we have for bringing peace to others. Beginning with your deepest and dearest friends, and of course, your own families. Finally, the eighth beatitude. Happy are those who are persecuted in the cause of right. Theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And this last beatitude has, what shall we call it, an appendix. Christ continues, blessed are you when people abuse you and persecute you and speak all kinds of evil against you for my sake. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward will be great in heaven. This is how they persecuted the prophets before. Except for this beatitude, I would long ago have been in the mental asylum. I didn't believe this. You don't live your faith faithfully. You don't remain faithful to Jesus Christ. You don't sincerely try to follow His teaching. Not paying for it. And the price is high. And you're all scared. want to be accepted by others. We want to be loved by others. And love is so often the consequence. Instead of being loved and accepted, we can be rejected by those from whom we expect their deepest love. Let's be clear and sure. His retreat is not poetry. It is reality. And here's the beauty of it. The more you pay for living Christ's teaching faithfully, the more those you love will reject you. Love them. You do everything in your power to win their affection. But in spite of your most heroic efforts,